We are in Genesis 48, and we're going to begin today at verse number 5. Joseph is meeting with his father Israel, Jacob, who is 147 years of age and very close to his final moments of life in this world. And so he's wrapping some things up. He's already made Joseph swear to him by the family jewels that he will bury his body back in Machpelah cave at Hebron, which Joseph agrees to. But now, on a separate occasion, hearing that Dad is doing poorly, when Joseph goes, he takes his two eldest boys, the ones that were born before Jacob moved to Egypt. This would be Manasseh and Ephraim. Now, they've got to be no younger than their upper teens, more likely early 20s, but somewhere in that range. And he brings them into the presence of his father, and Jacob reveals a plan by which he will get what he's always wanted, the designation of Joseph, his favorite son, and we have to acknowledge that, the son that received the coat of multiple colors, the eldest son of his beloved and preferred wife, Rachel, who is long dead. He's going to declare him to kind of be an heir by the backdoor method so that he can give him a double portion of the property once he dies. Now, again, it helps to understand the custom. When a man was about to die, the number of his sons that he wished to receive an inheritance would be counted up, and then there would be an additional number added to that, one more number. And when he died, his property was divided up into that many portions, and a double portion, that is two of those portions, would go to the heir. And that's when you read in the Bible about the double portion, it's talking about the portion of the heir. Judah is scheduled to receive that double portion because Reuben the firstborn was disinherited because of misbehavior. So were sons 2 and 3, Simeon and Levi. And so Judah is son number 4, the son of Leah, the senior wife of Jacob. And so he's the one that's going to receive 2/13 of Jacob's property. That's 12 portions plus one more, makes it 13 portions. Well, Jacob's about to change the arithmetic, and this is how he does it. Verse 5, this is him talking to Joseph. Now, your two sons who were born to you in the land of Egypt before I came to you in Egypt are mine. Ephraim and Manasseh shall be mine, as Reuben and Simeon are. The children that you fathered after them shall be yours. They shall be called by the name of their brothers in their inheritance. So what's he done here? He has subtracted Joseph from the 12. He has effectively disinherited him, which is no skin off Joseph's nose because Joseph is super, super wealthy because he's the vizier of Egypt. And that would have taken the number down to 11. But then he bumps it back up with two more, with Manasseh and Ephraim, who are going to be adopted by Jacob as full sons. So now there will be 13 tribes and 14 portions. And two portions will go to Judah, but one portion will go to Manasseh, one portion will go to Ephraim, and that's two portions for Joseph. And so that allows Jacob to give the double portion to Joseph. It's quite convoluted. It is quite manipulative, but it gets the job done, doesn't it? Now, verse number 7. As for me, when I came from Padan, that is Haran up in Aram, to my sorrow, Rachel died in the land of Canaan on the way, when there was still some distance to go to Ephrath. And I buried her there on the way to Ephrath, that is Bethlehem. Now, we told this story before, that Rachel died somewhere north of Jerusalem, near what is today the city of Ramallah, used to be the city of Ramah. And having died there in childbirth, Jacob buried her there on the way to Ephrath or Bethlehem, not at Bethlehem, because it says right here there was still quite some way to get to Bethlehem. Ramallah, I think, is 4 or 5 miles north of Jerusalem proper, and Bethlehem is about a little over 4 miles, somewhere between 4 and 5 miles south of Jerusalem. So we're talking about over 10 miles between the place where Rachel died and was buried and Bethlehem. Now, why is he telling this story? Because this is the reason why he wants Joseph's two sons to receive two full portions themselves. Because he loved Rachel more than Leah. He wanted Rachel to be his senior wife, and therefore he wanted her son, Joseph, to be the heir. And circumstances had not allowed that, and so now he has inserted a means by which he can accomplish it, irregardless of those circumstances. And this is why when we talk about the tribes of Israel, we end up talking not about the Joseph tribe, but about Manasseh and Ephraim, and why there are 13 tribes, not 12. Verse number 8. When Israel saw Joseph's sons, he said, "Who are these?" Now, that's interesting because he just told Joseph that he wanted the two boys to receive full adoption as his sons. But he doesn't recognize them. Might indicate some eye problems. We know that his father suffered from very long-term eye difficulty. He was blind and could not see during several of the last decades of his life. So maybe Jacob is in the same boat as his father, Yitzhak, or Isaac. So who are these? And Joseph said to his father, "They are my sons whom God has given me here." And he said, "Bring them to me, please, that I may bless them." Now the eyes of Israel were dim with age, so there's the mention. Something's going on with his eyes. Now, he's not necessarily full blind like his father, but he doesn't see well. So that he could not see. And so Joseph brought them near him, and he kissed them and embraced them. Now, again, think about these guys as being about 20, 21, something in that neighborhood. And so Grandpa is giving these boys a hug, and the salutatory kiss, you know, the kiss on each cheek. And then Israel said to Joseph, "I never expected to see your face. And behold, God has let me see your offspring also." So he is celebrating the fact that at one time he had become convinced it was over with. He would never see Joseph alive again. But God turned that around and let him see not just Joseph, but his two boys as well. Now, Joseph removed them from his knees. So apparently, in the hugging and kissing part, we end up with Manasseh and Ephraim kind of leaning on Grandpa Jacob's knees, sitting on them. And so Joseph takes them from that position, and then he bowed himself with his face to the earth, probably had his boys bow down at the same time to show respect to grandfather, and then to arrange them for the blessing ceremony that he's just said he's going to do. Now, again, this gets with this idea of the heir. Judah, even though it's not going to be recorded in our text for us, will at some point have hands laid on him, and the blessing of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob will be poured on him, the blessing that through his seed all the nations of the earth are going to be blessed. So that blessing ceremony will come because Judah is the heir by right of fourthborn, because the first three were disqualified. Jacob wants to do a similar blessing for Joseph by putting that blessing on his two sons that Jacob has just adopted as his own for all the reasons we just talked about. So he arranges these boys in a very specific fashion. So Joseph took them both, Ephraim in his right hand, that's in Joseph's right hand, because Joseph is facing his father. Joseph took them both, Ephraim in his right hand toward Israel's left hand, and Manasseh in his left hand toward Israel's right hand, and brought them near him. So he has arranged them so that Jacob can, because Jacob can't see, remember, so he's trying to help his dad out. When Jacob reaches out his hands, his right hand will rest upon the eldest of the two, and his left hand will rest on the number two son, because the right hand is the blessing hand, right? And so that needs to go to the eldest. Now comes the twist. Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it on the head of Ephraim, who was the younger of the two, and his left hand on the hand of Manasseh, crossing his hands. For Manasseh was the firstborn. And then he blessed Joseph and said, and again, this is important for us to understand that Israel is doing all of this to give Joseph equal footing with Judah, because Judah may be the heir that Jacob has to acknowledge, but Joseph is the one that he really wanted to acknowledge. So when he blesses Manasseh and Ephraim, he's actually blessing Joseph, and that's exactly what it says here in the text. He blessed Joseph and said, "The God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has been my shepherd all my life long to this day." So these guys are shepherds themselves, and so they relate to God as their shepherd. You know, just like they care about their sheep, they know that God cares about them. And we see this type of language get into the poetry of the Israeli people. Think about one of the most famous psalms written by David. "The Lord is my shepherd," right? And so that's why it comes in to this blessing ceremony. Verse 16, the angel who has redeemed me from all evil. Now you remember that. Jacob referred to the event at Penuel as being an interaction with God's angel, God's messenger. And Penuel means face of God. So he equated that appearance of the man there with God, the messenger, the angelic being that showed up there, he equated with God himself. It seems to be a theophany, a God appearing. And so the angel who has redeemed me, he's referencing God. The God who has redeemed me from all evil, bless these boys. In them, let my name be carried on, and the name of my fathers, Abraham and Isaac. So the blessing ceremony is, may they carry my name, which they do. I mean, the name of Israel gets carried in every last one of the tribes. They all are Israelis, whether they're in the Judah tribe or the Manasseh tribe or the Ephraim tribe. They are Israelis. And they also carry the name of Yitzhak, Isaac, and they carry the name of Abraham, because you see references to the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob quite a bit in the formula of the Old and New Testament. So that's the blessing so far. And then he says, let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. May they just be bunches and bunches, just all over the place. Now, in the midst of all of that, I mean, that's very serious stuff that's going on here. It's a very formal moment. But Joseph is like upset because of what just happened. And maybe some of you have been in this sort of circumstance or situation where there is something kind of formal going on, but there's some sort of problem with the stage setting, with the arrangements. And if it's bad enough, you can't stand it. You interrupt, right? Because, no, we can't go on with this sort of mistake happening here. We got to fix it. And so that's what he feels he has to do in the midst of this. When Joseph saw that his father laid his right hand, the preferred hand, on the hand of Ephraim, the second-born son, it displeased him. It got him upset. And he took his father's hand to move it from Ephraim's head to Manasseh's head. So we're in the middle of all those words that we were just hearing in the previous couple of verses. And Joseph is grabbing a hold of, probably gently, but forcefully, grabbing a hold of his dad's hands and effectively saying, actually, he kind of literally says it, you're messing up. Don't mess this up. This is important. So Joseph said to his father, as he's trying to move the hands that are crossed, not this way, my father. Since this one is the firstborn, put your right hand on his head. So, Dad, you got to get it right here. I don't know why you're crossing your hands here, but this one over here is the firstborn. He's the one that should have the right hand on him and receive the blessing. But his father refused and said, I know, my son, I know. So he is functioning as a prophet here. And in our next section, we will see that he does something similar with all of his boys. But he's receiving information from the Holy Spirit that in this blessing ceremony, the blessing is going to be crisscrossed, very similar to what happened in his life, but at God's direction, that Manasseh might be firstborn, but Ephraim was going to be receiving the more significant attention from God's blessing. So he says, I know, my son, I know. he also shall become a people. He also shall be great. However, his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his offspring shall become a multitude of nations. And that is exactly what does happen. Ephraim becomes super populous, and you can see this in some of the numbers we'll come across in the book of Numbers, but also culturally significant. The entire northern part of Israel, the 10 northern tribes, will at one point be referred to by the name Ephraim. It will become a stand-in for the entirety of the nation because the Ephraimites are so significant in it. And so Jacob is just passing on God information in the midst of this. Now, he's not done. There's still some more. So he blessed them that day, saying, "By you, Israel shall pronounce blessing, saying." And when he uses the term Israel here, he's not talking about himself. He's talking about the people group, the ethnic group that will be arising out of his family. "By you, Israel will pronounce blessing, saying, God make you as Ephraim and Manasseh." So, may God make you as blessed as the tribe of Ephraim, coming from this young man, and as the tribe of Manasseh, coming from his older brother. And thus he put Ephraim before Manasseh. Then Israel said to Joseph, "Behold, I am about to die." So he's already been telling Joseph this earlier, but it's getting closer. It's getting more significant. "But God will be with you, and he will bring you again to the land of your fathers." Now, this doesn't seem to just simply be spoken to Joseph, but rather to the people of Israel as a whole. Not specific individuals, but to the nation of Israel. It should be related to what God had told Abraham, that at some point after you, your seed is going to go to a land not their own. That would be Egypt. They will reside there for 400 years, for four generations, and then they will come back here to the promised land. And so that seems to be what Jacob is referencing, is that the nation of Israel will be brought again to the land of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the land of Canaan, which will become the land of Israel. Verse 22, "Moreover, I have given you, rather than to your brothers, one mountain slope that I took from the hand of the Amorites with my sword and with my bow." Now, this is a bit of a twist that we need to explain here. The property that he's referencing is Shechem. And Shechem automatically becomes the inheritance of the Joseph family. And it falls within the tribal boundaries, I believe, of Ephraim. And Joseph himself will end up being buried at the city of Shechem, or in the region of the city of Shechem. Now, Jacob did not buy the property at Shechem. If you remember right, he paid money in order to rent the grazing lands and the water rights for the region. However, you also remember that two of his sons, Simeon and Levi, killed the people living in Shechem, the men living in Shechem. And that property ended up being abandoned by the Canaanites to, apparently, Jacob. And so that's why it mentions here this one mountain slope. It's the shoulder region between Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim. And Shechem is that property. And it ends up being taken by the sword and by the bow. Now, Jacob personally didn't do it, but the fruit of his loins did. And so that is what he's referencing, is that when you guys do go back to the land, automatically the Shechem area belongs to the Joseph tribes, to the Joseph inheritance. And we will see that happen whenever we get, Lord willing, to the time of the book of Joshua and Judges. Let's set up the next story before we run out of time. Chapter 49, Jacob called his sons, all his sons, "Gather yourselves together that I may tell you what shall happen to you in days to come." And so what we will be studying next is Jacob knowingly acting as a prophet of God before he passes away, before he lapses into that final loss of consciousness and then into death. The Holy Spirit wants to talk about these men, but also about the seed of these men, the people groups, the tribal groups that will come into existence from them.